Welcome to The Tome. This is a D&D review podcast. We are going to spend some time looking in-depth at Dungeons & Dragons books. This will happen as often as I can. Take notes, look in-depth at the various source materials, and put together the podcast for you. I really hope to turn this into something that becomes useful for lots of people. I know I looked for something similar to this out there and really had a hard time finding it. I'm mostly going to be focusing on those materials created by Wizards of the Coast. Those seem to be the most popular and the most used by people in general, so that's going to be my focus. Just a real quick introduction to who I am. My name is Jeff. I have been a player of D&D since I was 14, and I'm now much older than that. So I'm fairly familiar with what's been around and what is around now, and I play in several different formats, tabletop and online, through Play by Email. And I just wanted to get a chance to give back a little bit to those people who are part of the gaming community, and give you my thoughts on the different gaming books that I'm reading. So anyway, our first episode, we are going to be looking at the game book that I've most recently finished reading, which is Mysteries of the Moonsea. It is a Forgotten Realm setting book, although it is different than most setting books that Wizards of the Coast releases. They did take a different format approach to it, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that as I go through some of the highlights of what's going on in this book, what I liked about it, some of the things I didn't really like about it. First of all, let me explain how Mysteries of the Moonsea is different. Mysteries of the Moonsea is set up to be not as detailed of some of the previous Forgotten Realms setting books. Instead of going detailed into the culture and the local area and some of the things going on in that area, some of the back history and that kind of stuff that some of the other books have gone into, Mysteries of the Moonsea, it gives you some of that, a brief summary of some of that, but then spends a lot of its time giving you some sort of locations and loose story arcs that you might want to follow if you wanted to actually turn this into a campaign. It's not enough to actually make a full adventure out of. It's not enough to make a full campaign out of. But the idea is to give you a few locations and a few adventure ideas to sort of get you started. An overview, I guess my opinion is that I'm not sure that I really liked this format change. I rather enjoyed what they were doing before with setting books. And I rather enjoyed what they were doing before with adventure books. And this sort of seemed to sort of halfway do both of them. I didn't get the detail and the real depth of information that I wanted from a setting book. I don't feel like I have a real strong grasp of the culture and the specifics and the little locations that can really flesh out a region and an area in a world as detailed as Toril or as the Forgotten Realms. Further, it didn't really give me what I look for in a good adventure book. It didn't give me the information that I'm looking for as far as tying in these larger story arcs together into one big arc, one large story that really, really drives home a really fun romp. There were some loose story arcs that sort of tied in here and sort of tied in there, and I'll talk a little bit more about those as I start to go through the book a little more in depth here. So let's just go ahead and get right into that. I'm going to start off talking. I'll start towards the beginning of the book, and we're not going to do it page by page because that would take entirely too long. But I do want to take some time and just go through some of the highlights of some of the things I liked, some of the things I didn't like, and just give you a brief summary of what it is that you could expect to find in this book. That way, whether or not you agree with me or not, I'll be able to provide you with lots of information and lots of explanations as to why, so that you can form your own opinions and figure out if this is the book for you that's going to suit your needs. So let's just start at the beginning. Let's start with the, of course, introduction. Normally, I don't look very in-depth at the introductions. I'm usually too interested, too gung-ho, jump right into the crunch and all the fun parts of what's in the book, and I fly right past the introduction. I get right into the real meat of the book, This time around, because of the different format, I actually spent some time looking at the introduction, trying to figure out what it was they were trying to do. And honestly, this is an introduction that is probably more useful than most introductions in most of the other books that you've seen. They include this section called the Moonsea Primer, which spends quite a bit of time talking about some of the what it's like in the Moonsea. It talks a little bit about what can you expect from the weather. What are the different city-states there and how do they function and relate to each other? What are the monsters in the area look like? What's the religious outlook in the area look like? And a little bit about how the people there view outsiders. It really is a nice little nod to the culture of the region, which is what I really like out of a setting book. Now, unfortunately, they did that entire thing in about 2 pages. And so it doesn't go very in-depth. It doesn't give me a lot of that detail. That was really a nice little bit of a bit of meat there that I really liked out of the book. After the introduction, they dig right into the first chapter, which is called Melvant in the North. Melvant being one of the major cities called City of Swords on the northern part of the Moonsea. And it gives a nice little introduction to Melvant and what's going on around there and what the city's all about. I really enjoyed, actually, this chapter probably the most. I thought the Melvant in the North section was very, very fun, very, very cool, gave me lots of neat ideas, lots of neat culture, lots of neat adventure ideas, and gave it to me in a way that really helped tie them together and helped tie them into a larger story arc. Okay, so Melvant. City of metalsmiths and merchants. They describe it as sort of a frontier city covered in mist and smoke from all the forges, all the people who are doing all the metalsmithing and that kind of stuff that seems to be very popular in the city. The environment is usually cold and clammy. It's in the northern part of the Moonsea, along the coast there. And they're big into trade. They're big into their merchant thing. They trade a lot across the Moonsea, sending their goods to other cities by boat. Although, interestingly, they mentioned that most people in the area don't actually know how to swim, even though they use boat travel a lot, because the water is so cold. And I never thought about that. That's an interesting idea. I never considered that people that would spend their lives on a boat might not know how to swim. So that's neat. Anyway, Melvant is ruled by 3 merchant families. And honestly, I wanted more about them. They didn't explain much about the 3 families, just sort of that there were 3 families and these are what they're called and they're in charge. Those three families pretty much run everything, although there is a whole council. Those 3 are the only ones that really take an interest in ruling the city. It's a grimy city. It's dirty and smoky and all that I mentioned. The city locations they give in this chapter are absolutely perfect. It's not so much detail that I can't add my own thing to the city. It's not so little detail that I don't get an idea of the layout. It gives me a definite idea of what the city looks like, but it doesn't give me so much that I get bogged down in specifics and details. It gives me just the right amount, so I really like the city locations section here. And I tell you what, I loved the villains section. It's just a section where they give you a list of 4 NPCs that might sort of be influential, honestly. This was so cool, I wish they had given me more. I wanted more NPCs. This gives me a little bit of the background of the city, but at the same time gives me some interesting characters to throw in there to make little cameos or to be major plot devices or whatever. As I place a campaign in the area. So that was really cool. I really like the villain section. The quest section. This is where you start throwing in these adventure locations. The quest section is the largest section of the chapter. It gives a lot of neat little opening to sort of this bigger story arc about a sort of a Thayan plot that are magically tattooing slaves and then sending them off to Zinal Keep in some sort of effort to infiltrate and get their claws into Zinal Keep and do all kinds of stuff. This chapter's quest section really made me hopeful that there would be sort of this neat story arc following this Thayan plot, and they sort of implied that this would show up again, and it kind of showed up again. I'll talk about that when we get into it. And then it really made me hopeful that this would carry on throughout the whole book. Then they also have another section called the Northern Moonsea Quest. The first quest section is all about quests in the city of Melvant itself. Then there's the Northern Moonsea Quest. It's just sort of quests and locations and possible adventure ideas that is not specifically in the city itself, but is sort of in the surrounding area around the city, out in the wilderness, doing that sort of stuff. And this one was really neat too. It gave me a very similar hope that there would be a really neat story arc sort of going on. And it's sort of it's all about collecting parts of sort of an artifact from this mysterious king who ruled the area in very, very long time ago in ancient times. Back in the days of a kingdom of goblinoids and ogres and giants and that sort of stuff. And all in all, this chapter was very cool. Gave lots of neat ideas and really, really made me hopeful that as I progressed in reading the other chapters that they would end up looking something like this too. And so that was really, really cool. The next chapter is about Hillsfar and the south. They went from north all the way down to the far south. The description of the city came out very similar, basics of what the city's all about and that sort of thing. It is a city of trade, they explain. It gives you more information up front about some of the campaign ideas and how to fit some of the locations in the quests that come later into some sort of a larger arc, some sort of a larger storyline. And honestly, that's one of the areas where I think the book showed some really bad consistency issues. This chapter looked much, much, much different than the previous chapter, as far as what kind of information they gave, where they gave it, how they organized some of that information. Some parts were really, really consistent, really, really cool, and some parts were very inconsistent. And honestly, this chapter, because of the inconsistency and because they didn't do things as well as they did in the first chapter, I think was probably the worst chapter of the four big chapters. But anyway, Hillsfar. Hillsfar is ruled by a merchant mage and his mercenaries called the Red Plumes. The merchant mage's name is Malthir. He's the first lord of the city. There's a whole council of lords, and he's sort of taken over and become the one lord, first lord, who sort of actually makes all the decisions for everybody else. He's an oppressive ruler, but largely he doesn't seem to really care what people do as long as it doesn't interfere with trade. He's all about trade and keeping the merchant lines open and doing that kind of stuff. Otherwise, the Red Plumes, his mercenary army, they're basically allowed to do whatever they want, and that might mean that they're extorting people or doing all kinds of horrible things and treating people badly or whatever, but they're basically allowed to do what they want as long as it doesn't interfere with trade. It's a human-dominated city. It used to be all kinds of other races involved in the city with elves and half-elves and all this other stuff. I believe I even read somewhere it has a dwarven background, which would have been really cool to hear about. You know, how many dwarven ruins might there be in the area or underneath the city or whatever that never got mentioned? That's another area where I think it was lacking. I really wanted some of the history and the background as to how this city came about and what's happened with it. But anyway, when Malthir took over, he's incredibly paranoid about other races, and so he had all of the other races killed, usually, or exiled. And oftentimes they found that the arena was a good outlet to getting rid of these other races. Rather than out, you know, just killing them in the street or whatever, round them up and for some fake crime or whatever, throw them into the arena to be killed by wild animals, and then you get a little bit of bread and circuses to entertain the crowd along with all the other neat things going on and getting rid of all the other races. Also, there's a powerful but small Thayan enclave here, so that it's going to bring up some of that Thayan plot that came up in the first chapter again, and it's actually connected to the city because Malthir is married to a powerful Thayan woman who actually spends most of her time in Thay, but is technically sort of the head of this enclave. And of course, also the Zents are here. The Zents are sort of like the main rivals of Hillsfar, and they like to mess with them and send spies and saboteurs and all that kind of stuff. So the city location section was again very, very good. Just the right amount of detail. I like the way they did the city section, the location section. The villain section was, again, awesome, but too short. But here is where this one really fails, is with the quest section. Very weak. No hooks provided. The other one provided hooks to sort of tell you how to get people into the quest. This one, no hooks provided, no adventure ideas given. It's really just a collection of locations with very little guidance as to what might be done with them or what could be done with them. And it was it takes a lot of space doing something that may end up being completely useless to your campaign. The Southern Moonsea quest had similar problems, although there were some interesting locations that I thought were really engaging and really had a chance to be really cool. There's an old elven wizard tower with portals and demons from portals to Mythranor. They've sort of drawn demons in from there, but they're trapped inside, and so it's sort of they've built this little community inside the tower, trying to figure out how to use the other portals in there to get other places. That was cool. There's a roadside shrine that sort of creates the super undead that I thought was really neat. It talks a little bit about the Bell of the Depths, which is this underwater location in the Moon Sea nearby, which was okay. It wasn't a great little section, but it had some potential to it. And then it also talked a little bit about this other location in these Cormanthor ruins that had a spell engine in it that at the center really had some neat and interesting potential to turn those locations in the area into some really neat adventures. I really liked those, even though the actual quests in the city I thought were kind of weak. The next chapter is Molemaster and the East. This chapter is set up very similar to the first chapter, only it doesn't have a real concept to connect the locations like Chapter 1 did. Molemaster, anyway, it's another cold seaside merchant city. They all seem to be seaside merchant cities. The description comes off as this city's sort of like the other cities, only doesn't have a lot of the quirks that some of those cities have. All in all, I saw a lot of potential in some of the groups that were presented in Molemaster, but they weren't very well fleshed out. For example, the Brotherhood of the Cloak controls magic almost oppressively throughout the city. I thought had a lot of potential, could do really neat things with, and they just didn't tell me very much about it. The villain section, the NPCs they presented, I still really liked. The quests in this section really tied together as one location that's just large enough that they pretended it was three or four locations, and then they threw in the Thayan enclave in town just for kicks, it seems. But really, it was all one location that led to the next location that led to the next location, not like as in the adventure led from one to the other so much as they were literally right next to each other, and as you left one location, you entered the next. The Eastern Moon Sea quest, these are the quests in the area around the city, but not actually in the city. This was actually quite good. There is a bit of a coherent story arc here, where the PCs learn about a couple of actually very interesting magical locations. It's sort of they have to find, excavate one of these locations, utilize it in a way that they want to, risk the dangers, learn about it, research it through all kinds of peril, and then they end up finding actually two magical locations that can give you somewhat interesting results when utilized. It almost gives sort of this archaeological fantasy Indiana Jones-like sort of adventure. It actually came off as a very fun little adventure that I wouldn't mind running. Last chapter, then, is Zintel Keep in the West. Gives a brief description and history again. The history section was a nice little tease, although really just wetted my whistle enough to really leave me wanting more, wanting to hear more about what's been going on in Zintel Keep and what's been happening there in the last several years and their larger history. They seem to continue to try to rebuild Zintel Keep and the Zinterim as a serious threat to the world, although Zintel Keep is rebuilding from recent disaster, which they talk very briefly about, but if you're not getting that information from somewhere else, then you're not going to get it from here either, which is one of the faults, I think, of the book, is that they make you go to other sources to get the full history, the full story about what's been going on. It is a city dedicated, of course, to Bane, much as the Zinterim, under the new leadership of Fazul Shimbrel, has been also dedicated to Bane. It gives enough information that you could place an adventure here, but you don't have enough information that you could place an entire campaign based out of the city, which I think could have been done if they had chosen to give you a more in-depth look at the city and the culture and the organization that runs that area, especially given recent events. They did talk repeatedly about all the ruins from the recent destruction of most of Zintel Keep and how it's been walled off, separated from the inhabited part of Zintel Keep by walls, but that they imply that there's this large section of what used to be Zintel Keep now just lying in ruins, which really just raised a lot of questions for me that, due to, again, the lack of depth, never really got answered. It leaves me asking things like, how has the destruction affected people? What's out in the ruins now? What has been out in the ruins? They seem to imply that it was monster-filled, and now they've started
started to clear it out, but there's still stuff out there that's causing problems. And they, again, talk about how they're clearing it up. So how are they clearing up? Why are they clearing up? Do they plan to repopulate? How do they plan on getting people to move back into this area? It just seems like there's a lot of that to that process that could be really, really interesting that they're not quite giving us yet. Again, the city locations was good. The villains section, the NPCs they provided in this chapter were good. The quest section, again, three of them were tied together, were connected, and were okay. Then the next one was this random beholder lair, which really didn't tie into anything, but there's some beholders that live in Zinalkeep. Surprise. And then just in case, since this is your high-level chapter, they progressively get higher and higher level. This is your highest level chapter, and so they throw in the Temple of Bane in Zinalkeep, so that would be your very dangerous location to deal with. The Western Moonsea quests included ruins. In the ruins section of Zinalkeep, there's a temple with an interesting magical location. There's some interesting story that honestly I thought could have been turned into a whole adventure, not just a simple little quest, one location quest thrown into the middle of this chapter. They talked about a temple to Moander over in Ulash. There's a dragon's lair in there by the mountains, which honestly was a very interesting looking encounter and a very interesting location. It just had very weak sort of plot devices connected to it. And then they also throw in the Citadel of the Raven, which has apparently become the real center of the Zinterim since the destruction of Zinalkeep, which, again, I didn't realize that. That's interesting history. I wish they had explained that to me. And honestly, the Citadel of the Raven could be its own small book or fit in very well to a separate book and get a whole chapter dedicated to it. So this one little tiny blurb about it just really left me asking for more, which is sort of the theme, I guess, of the book overall. So to sum up my thoughts on this book, they wanted to make a setting and adventure book sort of combined into one, but in order to do both, they seemed to sacrifice a lot. They didn't have a lot of the setting information that I really, really wanted, and it gave fairly weak adventure components without really fleshing those out and making them really, really fun. There was some interesting plot arcs that were created in the Melvant chapter that are really only mentioned here and there throughout the rest of the book. And honestly, the mentions of these early, early interesting plot threads become weaker and weaker and weaker every page you go by. Of the setting information that was sacrificed, you lost a lot of history. Recent and ancient. I'd be very interested in finding out both recent history and ancient history of the area, which could really make the whole region very, very interesting, and gives out some really great adventure ideas when you have that kind of stuff. More than half of the communities of the Moonsea, and this is the Moonsea setting book, were completely left out of the book entirely. They were shown on a map, and that's all the more information you got about them. Which left me really wondering, you know, what's going on in Flan? What's going on in Ulash? What's going on in Thintia? All kinds of things that could have been described. And to finish off, I'd like to talk a little bit about what was done well. They opened the story with a loose set of adventure arcs that could be fleshed out into something that really, really works. The NPCs presented were very cool. They did a very nice job of presenting very interesting NPCs. With quirks and histories that sort of would make them fun, not only interesting to read about, but also gave some insights into the people and the culture of the area, and could very easily be dropped into a game to add some really easy depth to the region and into any adventure, really. These NPCs could really be dropped into any location, but I really like them as part of the Moonsea. All in all, the cover price of this book was a little less than $30. I would value this book significantly less than $30. If you could find it cheap for $10 or $15, that's where I'd go with it. The value I give it is about $12 value. So that is the end of episode 1 of the tome. Thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate the fact that you would take the time out of your schedule to listen in and see what I had to say. I would really encourage anybody who's interested in contributing to please send me an email. The email address is thetomeshow@gmail.com. That is thetomeshow@gmail.com. So please, send me an email. Let me know what you're reading. If you disagree with my review of Mysteries of the Moonsea, let me know. If you are interested in contributing on something that's coming up on the show, maybe, or that you think I might be interested in reviewing, let me know that. And if you are interested in helping me make the show better, please let me know what you liked. Let me know what you, maybe you didn't like so much. I'm cool with that, too. Right now, I'm looking for as much feedback as I can get to try to make this show into something that's worthwhile for anybody who might be interested in listening to it. So once again, that is thetomeshow@gmail.com. In the future, I see on the list from Wizards of the Coast that Complete Mage is coming out soon, so I might want to do a review of that one. And I would also think that I'm going to maybe take a little look at the upcoming Ravenloft adventure, also coming out in October. So those are the two things you can expect me to be looking at that are new. I might also go back a little bit and look at some older stuff. I'm currently thinking of possibly doing a review of Hordes of the Abyss. So if you have any comments you'd like to contribute to that, audio comments are fine, email comments are great, and I will read them all as part of any review that I do on that subject, as well as any comments you have on the review that you listened to just now. Once again, thank you for joining me, and I greatly appreciate it. This is the end of episode 1 of The Tome.